Ja. Das ist noch nicht sicher, ob er ein Buch oder vier Bücher schreiben will.
So, good morning everybody. Welcome to another lecture on compact star physics. So the last time we discussed scaling relations of the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equations, and we looked at various examples, the free Fermi gas, the MIT Berg model, and the causal equation of state, and derived certain relationships. And today, we're going to extend the formalism we just developed to study interacting fermions. Any questions about last lectures? Interacting fermions. So we already had made an ansatz for interactions or for how equation of states scale as a function of the number densities. Yeah, so we assume that interactions are somehow given by some power law. And as we know, the equation of state is always given in terms of the number density if we use the energy density. So the energy density for the interacting part, so interacting, would then be given by a constant times the number density to some power small gamma. So how does the contribution to the pressure look like? So we know that the interaction part for the pressure is minus d. We had this relation before, dE over n over dN times, sorry, not the minus sign, n squared times dE over n with respect to the number density n. And we can compute this, so this gives an n squared. Then we have an n to the power gamma minus 1, so this gives a gamma minus 1 times c times n to the power of gamma minus 2. Yeah. Putting everything together, this is a constant times gamma minus 1 times n to the power of gamma. And this is just gamma minus 1 times the energy density where we just take the part, interacting part. Yeah. Okay. And we have seen that the speed of sound, we have seen this before actually, is just dE over dP, would then be given by gamma minus 1. And of course, this should be smaller equal 1. Therefore, we conclude that gamma should be smaller equal 2.
I have a question.
Yeah?
Like it's written. Oh. At the moment, it's not the right direction.
Yeah.
I mean, with the p.
Sorry.
If you take the derivative of epsilon n with respect to n, you don't get a gamma minus 1 factor in the front.
What do I get instead?
You just get a gamma. And then the exponent.
No, it's e over n. So I take the derivative of e over n. Yeah, epsilon divided by n is c to the power n to gamma minus 1. That's the relation we derived, the thermodynamic relation, to calculate the pressure when the energy density given is given in terms of the number density.
All right.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Okay, sorry. So this is a fraction, so e over n. Sorry, yeah. Some subtle detail, yeah. But ask questions if you think I'm doing something stupid, then just ask questions. Sometimes I do something stupid. So. Okay. So if we have two body interactions, it seems to be reasonable that the interaction is somehow proportional to the number density squared. Yeah. And that basically means we are at the causal limit if we just have that term dominating the interactions. So we can make the ansatz. So ansatz. So we say now that the energy density in the non-relativistic limit is given by the mass term plus a constant times n squared. Yeah. No, these are brackets. This is the non-relativistic case. Yeah. And then we have computed what the pressure is in a non-relativistic case. So this is a kinetic term, which is 1 over 5 m to the power 8 third. And then we have a 6 pi squared over g to the 2 thirds, number density to the 5 thirds plus c times n squared. Yeah, this term here is nothing else than just the kinetic term. Yeah, that's yeah, basically it's kf squared over m times the number density. Yeah, and that's why we get n to the power 5 thirds. Yeah, this is the polytrope we had before for the non-relativistic limit. Goes like the number density to 5/3, and this is the prefactor. Good. Okay. So for low densities, we see that actually this term dominates, and also this term dominates. Yeah. So low densities. We see the energy density in the non-relativistic limit is just a mass term. And the pressure is proportional to n to the 5 thirds, which then is proportional to the energy density to the 5 thirds in the non-relativistic limit. Yeah. Okay, skip this one. So here we have then again the polytrope with gamma equal 5/3. Good. So that's okay in the low density limit. We get a free Fermi gas. So this is the correct limit. Yeah. It also means somehow in order to get the correct low density limit, this term here, that the power of this term should be larger than 5/3. Otherwise, it would spoil the low density limit. Then somehow interactions will become more important than the kinetic term at low densities. So let's increase in density. So higher density. So for higher density, something is happening now with the pressure. So the energy density, we assume, is still given by the mass term. But now the pressure in this higher density limit is now, at some stage, will be dominated by the interaction term. Yeah. So let's assume that this is going to change the behavior. There's some turn-off. We can calculate this turn-off density, right? So when this term becomes equal to this one, we get some critical density. And at that density, the other term dominates. So it goes like C times n squared, the pressure. Yeah. So this goes like, this goes like epsilon squared. So even higher densities. The energy density now is also dominated now by this term, C times n squared, as is the pressure. Yeah, so we get the causal limiting equation of state. The energy density is equal to pressure. Okay. Good. Okay, so here. Yeah, so here we get a polytrope, basically. With gamma equal 2. Good. Okay, so let's make some generic statement about the max of mass. How does the max of mass look like? So let's first denote what this constant is. So that by dimensional reasoning, that constant here has the dimension of 1 over the mass squared. So the dimension of this constant is actually something like 1 over the mass squared. And we denote this as the interaction mass scale. Yeah. So Mi is the interaction mass scale, or simply the interaction scale. And one example we know already, this is, for example, the gravitational constant g, which goes like 1 over the Planck mass squared. Yeah, it's the coupling strength. So we see a similar coupling strength here. But now, of course, these interactions are of microscopic origin. So this might be interactions from the standard model, not necessarily Coulomb interactions, but interactions we have from electroweak interactions, which go like 1 over the typical scale we have for electroweak interactions, which would be something like the Higgs mass. So weak interactions go like 1 over the Higgs mass squared, or the set or W bosons, which are the mediators, the mediating bosons for electroweak interactions, which is at a scale of about 100 GeV. What would be the corresponding interaction scale for strong interactions? QCD, nuclear physics, and thereabout.
Pion mass.
The pion mass, right. So this gives the right mass scale then for strong interactions. The pion, which is exchanged as the boson for strong interactions. So this goes like 1 over the pion mass squared. Good, so let's write this down. So electroweak or weak interactions Mi is at the order of 100 GeV. Yeah, this is the boson mass, W set boson mass. And for strong interactions, let's write down the pion mass. Or you can also think about lambda QCD from perturbative QCD. Lambda QCD, right, has a similar mass scale. So for comparison, lambda QCD, is considered to be around 200 MeV, not too far away from the pion mass.
But why is it pion mass?
Pardon me?
Why is it pion mass? Why is that so important?
by the pion mass. The pion mass is the particle which is exchanged between the neutron and proton, and is so the fundamental particle for nuclear forces. Yeah. You can also look at what's the corresponding range of this interaction. The corresponding range of this interaction is about 1 Fermi. 200 MeV corresponds to 1 Fermi just by the uncertainty principle. And this would be then 3 orders of magnitude smaller, actually. So we're talking about not 10 to minus 15 meters, but 10 to minus 18 meters. Yeah. Yeah.
I still have a question in this sense. Like, I understand biomass in the case of the nuclear, yes, protons and neutrons. But why can it be extended for every particle being under strong interaction?
Every particle. So the question was, why can I extend this to every particle under strong interactions?
Yes.
Because basically of this scheme. So for all interactions, QCD is the underlying fundamental theory, and that's the typical scale of QCD. From that, it emerges eventually that this is the pion mass at this scale. And it turns out, I mean, there are particles where you can say, okay, they do not really couple to pions, they couple to kaons. For example, but still, the mass scale, the typical sizes of all these hadrons we have is at the range of 1 Fermi. That's just a typical scale of QCD hadrons. The typical sizes of all the hadrons are 1 Fermi, basically. Okay. So we can rewrite the pressure in the following form. So if we say it is interaction dominated, it's C times N squared. So this goes like 1 over the action mass squared times N squared. Now we rescale. So we say that the interaction mass scale divided by some scale. And here we take the fermion mass to the fourth power, to make this a dimensionless quantity. We did this before. Is now and to have the right units, so we divide this also. So this gives an 1 over mi squared n squared over mf to the fourth power. So this gives actually an mf squared over mi squared n over the fermion mass cubed squared. Yeah, so we really have now an equation which we can write in the following form. Basically that we have dimensionless quantities. P prime is something times n prime squared. Yeah, where all is dimensionless. And this factor is also dimensionless, so we call this interaction strength just y. And y is then defined to be mf squared over mi squared. So the ratio of the fermion mass over the interaction mass scale. So mf is the fermion mass. So we will have a new quantity which describes interaction. So when we do now our rescaling analysis of the TOF equation with that kind of equation of state, it will depend, of course, on the fermion mass. Yeah, this sets the typical scale. But the whole solution will depend now on this dimensionless parameter y. Yeah, so we can make a study for arbitrary values of y and then apply it for what you want to have, what kind of fermion mass you want to have. We fix then at the end. So the maximum mass is reached actually when we change the equation of state, and the equation of state becomes unstable. And it turns out it becomes unstable when the interaction terms are becoming dominant. Interaction terms and they are becoming important for epsilon total. And the reason being that basically this is the change in the equation of state. It turns out that when you solve the Tom and Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation, that the polytope with gamma equal 5/3 will give stable solutions. Also, this one will give stable solutions. But this one is the causal equation of state, and in that form it will be unstable because then the pressure scales linear with the energy density.
Do we still use prime for dimensionless quantities? So P in prime, is it dimensionless or?
This is dimensionless, yeah. Yeah. So this means that basically these two terms, we have the mass term at a critical density, is about equal C times the n critical squared. Yeah. And that we can recast in the form that nc is about mf over c. And this is mf times mi squared. So this is mf cubed over y squared.
And is c still a constant?
C is now the critical density.
No, c. No, nc.
This one is a constant, yeah. It's the C from above, yes. It's the 1 over mi squared. So I use this one here. So this is 1 over mi squared. So it gives mf times mi squared. Okay. So how does the critical energy density scale? The critical energy density is we can use either terms, either the first term, mf times nc. And this is then just given by mf to the fourth power divided by y squared. Yeah. And the critical pressure is now 1 over mi squared n nc squared, which is about 1 over mi squared mf to the sixth power divided by y to the fourth power. So this is about mf to the fourth power divided by y squared. So now we see that the energy density and this critical pressure all scale like the mass to the fourth power divided by y squared. So for the other cases, for the free Fermi gas, we have always seen it scales like mf to the fourth power. Yeah. Free case. For the free case, we have seen that the energy density, that the maximum mass scales inverse proportional to the mass of the fermion squared. Or the characteristic energy density to a half, yeah, and so does the radius. So now the characteristic energy density, which defines the maximum mass, is like 1 over y squared times the fermion mass to the fourth power. So we can immediately make an educated guess for the interacting case. And max scales like y over the mass of the fermion squared. Yeah, is this line of argument reasonable? Yeah, we have this characteristic scale for the maximum mass configuration. We take 1 over the square root of the characteristic scale, and we know how the maximum mass scales with those parameters. So it has to scale. Again, it scales like 1 over the fermion mass squared, as before, but it is proportional to y. Yeah? So And also the radius. The radius is the same. The r critical is then also a y over the mass of the fermion squared. Yeah, both scale in the same manner. Yeah. We can also write more explicit formulae. So basically, we can look at the Landau mass for the interacting case. Is then y times the Planck mass cubed over mf squared. So it's y times the Landau mass and the corresponding scale for the interacting scale for the radius is the Planck mass over the fermion mass squared. So it's y times the Landau radius.
This is the meaning as
pardon me?
As an indice, is it a C or an L?
This is an L.
Thank you.
The Landau mass. That's the Planck mass, yeah. Okay, so the important lesson to learn here, and that will be important later on for neutron stars, is this one, this relation here, this one here. Oops. I scratched through this one. Sorry. The important lesson to learn is the maximum mass increases for the interacting and a small note, y must be larger than 1. Modulo numerical p factor. So we can take now any fancy equation of state, but if it boils down that at eventually this interaction term proportional to n squared dominates, then we will find out that the maximum mass scales linearly with the interaction strength y. Yeah. So now we have seen the case, for example, for a free Fermi gas. Yeah, for a free Fermi gas. Or here we say for neutrons, we have numerically seen that the maximum mass is about 0.7 solar masses. Yeah. Observation from pulsars, we will come to this. We see that we have m at the order of 2 solar masses. There are now 3 candidates which all have masses around 2 within the error bars, or 1.9. So the maximum mass, the most massive neutron stars we see are around 2 solar masses. So this means we need interactions to explain this. So interactions are important to boost this from 0.7 to 2 with y, say, larger than 3. Yeah, otherwise, we cannot observe it. That's the interaction strength. Of course, the larger y, the stronger will be the force. Yeah, so if y is much larger than 1, actually, we will come to the case where we can ignore it, because the scale drops out eventually. We can ignore that. We have then the free case again. And for the when we have y larger than 1, we have then effects from the interaction, and these need to be larger than 3. Now, can this be fulfilled for for strong interactions. Is this reasonable to have a y larger than 3? So let's look at back at the definition of this interaction strength y. Where is it?
Yeah.
Where?
In the middle.
Here. One second. I'm sorry, there's a mistake here. So I actually wanted to define it like this. And probably, yeah. Otherwise, this relation here doesn't work, right? Yeah. Okay. So it's a linear relation between the fermion mass and the interaction scale. So let's look down for nuclear forces. Nuclear force, so what's the typical mass of the fermion? So the mass of the fermion is the nucleon. And the interaction scale was lambda QCD. So y is 1 GeV divided by, let's say, the pion mass or lambda QCD. Let's make it just an order of magnitude guess, 100 MeV. So this is at the order of 10. Yeah. So the nuclear force is strong enough to really explain to boost up the maximum mass by factor 3 at least. Questions about this? You can, I mean, with the equation of state we have put down here, right, in dimensionless form, you can solve now the Toff equation and compute the numerical prefactor. So we know in a limit when y is much, much larger than 1, we will get out this limit. If y is much smaller than 1, we will get out the non-interacting case, basically. If you put y asymptotically to 0, we get rid of the interaction term, basically. We have a free Fermi gas left. Yeah. So the numerical solution has to be of the following form. Has to be of the form a number plus another number plus y times the Landau mass. And the numerical prefactors turn out to be 0.384. Let's put a zero in front. And 0.165. I'm sorry, times y. Yeah? Numerically. We can also compute now the compactness, so the maximum compactness. Again, it turns out that the compactness for the maximum mass configuration is the maximum compactness, G times M max over R critical. And if we say that Y is dominating, then we get out 0.21 for y much, much larger than 1. and we get 0.11 if y is much smaller than 1. This is the value we have seen before for a free Fermi gas, and this is the value actually for the interacting case. Let's write down maybe so that you can prove this are critical numerically. Turns out to be 3.367 plus 0.797 times y times the Landau radius. And thereby you get those two values here. Good. Okay.
Question?
Yeah?
Which equation you are solving numerically to get these values?
Basically this equation here. Basically, we take a free Fermi gas plus this interaction term. So it's not only the non-relativistic case here, it's the full Fermi gas, the free Fermi gas, the full one, plus the term C times n squared. Numerically, for a Fermi gas plus interactions as described above. Good. Any more questions about this one? So what are we doing now? Now we have a few minutes left and we can start looking at boson stars if you like to. Just have a quick look at boson stars. Boson stars. So we can make now a similar analysis for boson stars using Landau's argument. Yeah, so again, we have the energy as a function of the radius. We have the gravitational term. The mass of the boson times the total mass of the star over the radius of the sphere plus the kinetic term. So with the total mass m is n, the number of bosons times the mass of the boson. Yeah. Mb is the boson mass. So now, what about the kinetic energy for a boson at t equals zero? Now, a boson for t equals zero is a Bose-Einstein condensate. It has no momentum, so basically no kinetic energy, and then the whole argument seems to fail. So we will always be negative. We will never have a stable solution. There's nothing to balance the gravitational pull. Now, with the help of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, we can assign actually some momentum to it. So for bosons, the kinetic term or the momentum of the particle, K boson, we say that this is just smeared out over the sphere. Yeah? 1 over r. This is the uncertainty of the boson. It's somewhere within the sphere, we don't know where, but still this uncertainty relates to a corresponding momentum. Yeah? So you see already at that stage that the whole argument for the stability of boson stars will be entirely different compared to a Fermi star. Yeah, so now we have the following situation that E of R is minus G mass of the boson squared times N over R plus a number 1 over R. Principle, if you just have this relation, then the number would be actually 1. So I can even omit this 1 here. So E critical is 0. Again, Landau's argument. This is the limiting case. And this basically means that minus G mass of the boson squared times N max is equal 1. Yeah. So the number of the maximum number of bosons for a boson star is then given by the Planck mass squared over the mass of the boson squared. Yeah. Just recall what was the relation we had for fermion stars. Okay. Do you know? Pardon me? It was the whole stuff to the third power, right? Yeah. So now we have the square instead of the third power, and the corresponding maximum mass. You see, will be now n max times the mass of the boson. So this will be given by the Planck mass squared over the boson mass. Yeah. Before that, we had an additional factor of Planck mass over fermion mass. Yeah. We had Planck mass cubed over fermion mass squared. Now it's the Planck mass squared over the boson mass.
What was n max for the fermions again? It was the entire thing to the power of 1/3, right?
Yes. For fermions, it was this 1 to the power 3. Okay. So now if we fix the boson mass, we can immediately make an educated guess for the maximum mass. And there will be corresponding values for the critical radius. Of course, the critical radius is just given by the maximum, by this condition we have here. Yeah. So the critical radius is just given by the mass of, 1 over the mass of the boson. Again, it's a factor Planck mass over boson mass less than we had for the fermion case. So if we really have now boson masses, which we know from the standard model, we will see that this boson sphere has microscopic scales. But you can think about bosons which have maybe scales which are 10 to minus something electron volts, very, very small masses. And then you could have astronomical sizes, yeah, but only in that case. So we don't know any stable boson, unfortunately. You know, the Higgs boson decays, the pion decays, so all bosons we know of are not stable. So this, if you have a stable boson star, this would be some physics beyond the standard model. Yeah?
Well,
yeah.
Aren't photons bosons
too? Okay, photons, yeah, you're right, okay. Yeah. That's the... Only boson which is stable, yeah.
Also there are some others like composite nucleon, right?
A composite nucleon is a boson which is stable, right. Okay, you got me. Yes. Yeah,
so. What was the reason again that bosons are not so stable like fermions?
Pardon me?
What was the reason again that bosons are so unstable?
Bosons are so unstable? Because in the standard model everything is composed basically out of baryons and leptons, and they are all fermions. And the bosons in the standard model are just the particles which are in charge of the interactions and not itself stable.
We just found out that there are some bosons that are stable.
Yeah, so we found the boson, so the photon would be stable, but you can't make really a stable boson star because the mass is zero. And if we look...
Don't talk
The deuteron would be a boson, but it will, if you build a deuteron star, more stable configuration would be a white dwarf with a heavier nucleus. And you need charge neutrality, you need electrons around, so the pressure will be dominated by electrons, not by the bosons. So pure bosons, yeah, it's hard. So we need an uncharged boson which is stable, which has mass. So, right? If you put in here that the mass to be zero, then the radius goes to infinity, diverges, and also this expression somehow diverges. So these gions, so Wheeler was looking at those solutions, are found to be unstable. Massless bosons do not form a stable boson star. Okay. So, yeah. One can do the same iteration, just to briefly recap, I'm over my time, with interactions. You can make now the same argument now for the maximum mass and the radius we have done for interacting fermions. And I will just quote the final result. You find actually, again, that the interaction terms are dominating. Yeah. Again, you find that the critical energy density for the onset is just given by now the mass of the boson to the fourth power divided by y squared. Yeah. And then you find actually that the boson, the maximum mass for an interacting boson star would then be just proportional to this interaction strength times the Landau mass. And the critical radius in the interaction case is proportional to y times the Landau radius. So despite the fact that in the non-interacting case you get completely different values for the masses and the radii, it turns out for an interacting boson star, you get back the Landau mass and the Landau radius. So in the sense we had it defined for fermion stars. So interacting boson stars, when they have the same scale, would look similar as interacting fermion stars. Because it's all dictated by the interactions. So the interaction counts and not the statistics. The quantum statistics doesn't count anymore. Yeah, because interaction the kinetic terms are not important. Interaction is important. So everything scales the same. And you find then also, you can compute now, the corresponding equational state will be different. You get different numerical p-factors. But those numerical p-factors are very close to the ones for fermion stars. So you find that actually that the maximum compactness is 0.21 if y is much larger than 1. And this is very similar to what we have for interacting fermion star. Okay, any questions? Boson stars. Okay, so then we stop here, have a 5-minute break, and continue with the exercises.